when we look at innovation and technology and building, for example, everything that Thomas Edison did and Nikola Tesla did, these were from trial and error, which is creative guesses and trying things out. If you look at how evolution works through variation and then natural selection, where it tries a lot of random mutations and it filters out the ones that didn't work. So this seems to be a general model through which all complex systems improve themselves over time. They make bold guesses and then they weed out the things that didn't work.
Saw them. And so up and down the street, homeless people would line up, receive hot food on Wednesday, and it was a orchestrated event. The community would be involved in it, so much so that police would be guiding the facilitation of this event. Well, sometime within the last 6 months, that shelter got taken down. And now there's a new building under construction right next door to my house. I don't know what exactly is being built over there. I have no idea. But I see it's a massive building now. It's like a two-story compound as opposed to the one-story compound. And I haven't spoken with anybody in the city to figure out what exactly is being built in its stead. But what I do wonder, though, every day, because behind my house, there used to be a plethora of activity at night. It would be impossible to get a night of rest without some level of activity. And I've grown accustomed to it because I'm weird like that. You know, I've just grown used to the ruckus, the people energy that shelter being next door to my house would manufacture. But what I did wonder, though, was whether or not this shelter was a casualty of the pandemic, or it's just improvements to the existing shelter. However, what I would wonder along the way, though, is where did the homeless go? That was the most interesting part of my inner dialogue, wondering where the homeless went. And the reason why it was interesting to me is because it created this bigger, broader panoply of ideas about change and revolution and innovation. Because when we ask for something to change, what we are asking for is something that we haven't yet fully imagined. So let's say that the compound was too small and they wanted to create a space where there were more rooms for residents. And they said, all right, we're going to overhaul the compound. We're going to tear it down and build better in its place. But in the meantime, the homeless have to survive a harsh winter. So then you have an ethical and moral quandary. It's, do you destroy something now, deal with the repercussions of that destruction, and hope that when you build back better, the people who you've harmed as a byproduct of your goodwill, the people who had to suffer as a byproduct of your goodwill, and I'm putting quotes around goodwill because that's relative, will they even make it to see your revolution, to see your systemic overhauling? Will they be grateful for the tough winter they had to survive without you? But where are my manners, ladies and gentlemen? My name is Rice Toluca. You are here for another transmission of the Being Centered podcast. I hope you guys are well. How are you guys doing? It's been a while. Thank you guys for participating in that last episode, for just allowing me the grace to just get one off impromptu. Thank you for listening. I appreciate you guys always for listening, always listening to a brother like me just getting into this microphone and talking. There's a couple of things that I want to get to today that, and I might be all over the place too, so bear with me as I try to connect these dots. Because what I believe is that the universe communicates with all of us. And if we just listen well enough to the events of the world and the events of our immediate context and circumstance, we'll be able to connect some level of wisdom. We'll be able to glean some level of divine insight, because the universe speaks through the people in our lives if we just listen. If we just listen close enough. So bear with me as I try to connect all these strands. But again, where are my manners? How are you guys doing? Allow me to check in with you guys. Can I get a high? Can I get a low? What have you guys been through that is great this week? What have you guys been through that is not that great this week? Let us talk about it. Come on, hit me. I'll go first. A high for me, I would say, has been I have purchased a pop filter and a windscreen for my microphone and some other new equipment. So hopefully that improves the audio just a little bit as I place these P's, T's, and C's into the microphone, and it's not blowing out your guys' eardrums or headphones. So that's making me real excited. I love new equipment. So that is always a pleasure. That is always a blessing. So that is making me really happy, recording into this new version of my microphone. The low, I would say. What is the low? What would be my low? I would say that my low I would say that my low is that I have not been writing my books as much as I should be. I have not. And it is bringing tentative feelings in my heart that I might not make the deadlines that I set, the deadlines that the publisher set. So I'm feeling like if I don't pick up the pace, I will not make it. So that is my low, just a little bit of disappointment in myself, been busy with other things. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you guys something. I work 24 hours of the day. I feel like I say this to you guys all the time, but I work around the clock. Around the clock. From sun up to sundown, I am working. In the next couple of weeks, I'm probably going to finally take a little bit of vacation time. Just a little bit of vacation time and be really intentional with what I do. So I'm just going to take a little bit of vacation time for myself. Probably going to go skydiving. Do some things for myself. I want to go to the aquarium. Going to Florida. Me and the homies are planning on going to Washington. But just trying to be really intentional until those moments. Here's a little bit of inside baseball. When you work for yourself, it's incumbent upon you to be incredibly intentional with your time. And I've worked for myself probably, this is my, I haven't had a regular job, a 9-to-5. In 5 years. I haven't had a 9-to-5 in 5 years. But it's been 5 years of, Rice, you are responsible for yourself, creating your own life, creating your own schedule, creating your own timetable. And of course, in that process, you have parents and family members saying, boy, get yourself a regular job. Get yourself a regular job. It'll be easier. But there's something about the freedom of intention with my own time and allowing myself to be responsible on my own clock that I will not trade for any amount of security. I love the ability of waking up and challenging myself to be better than I was yesterday. Not because I am being forced to, but because I'm forcing myself to, if that makes sense. It really has less to do with being a boss and ownership. I really don't care about that type of stuff. I'm not really a huge proponent of, you know, ownership is how we free the, let me not even get on a tangent here. I don't care about ownership and being a boss. That is not the reason why I champion for myself, working for myself. The reason why I champion working for myself is simply because I know my personality and I don't like authority and I like the maximum amount of time to flesh out ideas that can help people. Like, I love the ability that I have dedicated a portion of my life, a portion of my youth to figuring out complex systems and trying to understand how I can give that level of wisdom and insight to make a dent inside of the system that we do have, but also help illuminate the fallacies of reality and bring along some level of peace within my contemporaries. Like, I just love it. I love doing this. I love who I am. I love what I am. I love what I've done. I love what I've created. I love my ideas. I love the way I think. I love people. I love human beings. I love talking to people. I love the minds of people. Like, I truly just love people, and I'm a naturally happy person. I wasn't always like this, by the way. I was not always like this. I had to, if I were to explain what I had to do to myself in order to become the person I am, A lot of you guys wouldn't even believe me. I say this all the time. I say this to my brother. I say this to my friends. I say this to my cousin. Like, if I had to explain to you guys the moments in my life that have taken me to the space that I am in my current context, y'all wouldn't believe me because it's crazy. It's literally crazy talk. But I'm writing about these things so I can probably give some level of insight. I'm writing both about the theoretical, and I'm also writing about the personal. Like the book that I'm working on for February that I want to release on February 2nd, 2022, that is both a theoretical and a personal account of the things that I have done to approximate some version of peace. And I'm far from done, ladies and gentlemen. Do not even allow me to pretend like I am a finished product over here. I learn every day. I learn the limits of my understanding every day. I try to gain more understanding every day. I'm a buffoon every day. I'm an idiot every day. But I'm a happy idiot. I'm a happy clown. I don't take myself too seriously. But yeah. Let me not get on that train of thought there for a second. Before I get into what I really want to get into, I want to talk to you guys about intentionality, because I feel like this quick conversation is very important, and I am no authority on what I'm about to say. I am no authority on what I'm about to say. So I don't think I even told you guys about my dream. I had this really, really incredible dream. This really, really incredible dream. This incredible series of dreams, actually. It was all one night, and it felt like a fever dream. I woke up from that dream, and firstly, I couldn't even get a night's sleep, a good night's sleep. But I woke up from this dream incensed by what I experienced in this dream. And in a lot of my dreams, since I've been a kid, I've had dreams of my teeth falling out. And in dream interpretation, what falling teeth mean, or broken teeth means, is that change is coming. It's that change is coming. And because it is manifesting in your dream world, you are resisting or fighting change. And so I've always had these dreams about change and my teeth breaking. And this last time I had very, very vivid dreams about change and things, and it encapsulated with my teeth falling out and getting broken at the end of it. And so that was me realizing within myself, there's a change I must make that I know I must make, but I'm fighting it desperately. And so I had to do some inventory and figure out, all right, what is this change that I'm fighting? And I was able to pinpoint it. I'll probably talk about it on another podcast once I completely sort out these real world events in my personal life, make sense of these business changes and so on and so forth. But changes are one of the things. I was being stubborn, but change is scary. So, and since I've had that dream and made the adequate changes, my life has been, and I hate to brag, but I live a good life, but my life has been progressively even better than it was before, since I've made these little minute changes to my life. And so things became clear again. And like I always say, I'm a buffoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am a man seeking as much clarity as you guys. However, the difference between me and most, that clarity is my number one objective. My number one objective. Spiritual peace is my number one objective. Religious insight is my number one objective. Growth is my number one objective. These things are first and foremost to me. first before anything that I do. Growth and purpose are number one. And all the things that I named are encompassed inside of those two ideas. Everything else comes second. Everything else. My family, my friends, my personal life, my happiness, my career, all of those come after my personal growth. After. And I've been living like that for the better part of a decade. The better part of a decade. Or approaching a decade. What am I? I'm 27 years old. Yeah. So I'm approaching a decade of living like this. So I say this to say that when you live like this, it's not easy, number one. It ostracizes you a lot of times. It creates often, it creates boundaries that might appear impenetrable to people who want to get close to you. What it also does is it gives you a misappropriation of the idea of time. So you never feel like you have enough time. But not having enough time is just that. It's a feeling. It's not a fact. Time is eternal. It's present. It's omnipresent. It's always going to be there. The feeling of not having enough time is just a feeling. It dissipates and it's controllable by your mentality and your actual body. But compass with that is you believe that when you have enough time, you having enough time is going to match with other people's time. And it's not. It's that endless dance. But what this does do for everybody and for me in particular, it teaches me not to take things personal. That things are not happening to me, they're just happening. That is the mentality that I think is of the supreme mind, of the supreme godhood, that things are just happening. There is no you who is experiencing the difficulties. The difficulties are just being experienced. There is no you in the cosmic perception of life. There is no you out there in the cosmos. You is a construct developed by your mind. So I only speak of Rais to Luca so you guys can make some level of connection to the ideas that I'm presenting. But quite truthfully, Rais to Luca is just a character. No different than the person that is beyond this microphone listening. You're just a character too. You're a facsimile. You're an amalgamation of things that you put together to just survive in this world. So there's sometimes, I remember a couple of years ago, for me, this is how I operate. If you were good to me ever, like ever in life, if you were ever good to me, ever kind to me, ever respectful to me, I love you forever. I love you forever. I love you as though you are my closest friend. I really do not treat people different. I'm a fool because I give the same level of trust to a stranger on the street that I give to my closest friend. The reason being is because as people, we do not trust. We do not give out trust with the hopes that it will never be violated. The more trust you are able to give out, the more courageous you are. And so when you trust more, you build up your courage. Because with trusting people, there's that implicit possibility that your trust might be violated. But if you're courageous, you can maintain the violation and love all the same. There are boundaries that are in place inside of that too. Yes. However, trust is one of those things that it's an extension of the love that you exist. It's an extension of the love that is divine itself. Because remember, to err or to error is human, but to forgive is divine. And in order to forgive, you first have to forgive yourself. And most forgiveness and most apologies have nothing to do with the person that is seeking your forgiveness. They have all to do with yourself. Why do I say this? Because I see so much pain. I see so much pain every day. Every day there is so much pain. I'm off of Twitter, but I can only imagine the kind of pain that is off Twitter. The reason why I got off Twitter is because of words are my domain. I love words. And so when I'm taking in ideas via the written word, it sticks with me more than seeing images like on Instagram. However, I also got off Twitter for the simple fact that what I recognized on Twitter and the same thing that I kind of recognize on Instagram, or why I like Instagram more than Twitter a little bit, is about to be connected here in a second. What I was able to realize is that the character of Rais Taluk was getting praised too much on Twitter. The character, not the human being, not the person with flaws and foibles and limitations and arrogance and hubris and narcissism and all of these human characteristics that I'm seeking and that we are all seeking to expunge, hopefully. But the character was being praised because I have built up this character over time, as we all have. And on Instagram, I recognize that that character is depleted because I don't speak on there. I just do goofy shit. Or I do things that are less to do with how I actually feel about something. We have one brain. If you're not intentional in one part of your life, you're going to be unintentional in other parts of your life. It's just how we are as animals. We cannot separate how we do from what we do. And so what I end up seeing today, in light of the Kyle Rittenhouse discussion, is a lot of unintentional speaking, a lot of I don't like talking as though we know. I think that's one of the most detrimental things we can do as a culture. And it's something that I was once guilty of when I was assessing the ills of society. I was speaking of it as though I knew, when there was much more for me to know. And there's something about the narrative, about this thing, that we really have to look into, because I don't want to get into the weeds of whether or not Mr. Rittenhouse is a product of white supremacy, whether or not we have to change the judicial system, comparing this circumstance to Tamir and Trayvon and Mike Brown. We're losing ourselves in a little bit of the whirlwind. We're allowing the media once again to do what the media does, which is sway our mentality away from ourselves and buy into a collective consciousness of negativity that is diluting and polluting our peace. So to bring things back center, the import of our moment in the Kyle Rittenhouse whirlwind is to be intentional with what we are focusing on and to ask ourselves, why has society, American culture, why has American culture always turned the trials into entertainment? Why are trials always entertainment in this country? Really ask yourself that. Ask yourself that. I think I have the answer, and I'm going to share a little bit of it with you guys. But ask yourself that. And why do we allow this country to turn trials into entertainment? Why do we buy into it? Why does it propagate our attention? Our feeds, our streams of consciousness. Why? From the top to the bottom, why? Why are our powerful, our wealthy participating in this? Why? Me and my brother were actually talking about this past weekend. And I was telling him how society is built within a caste system. All systems work from a top-down mechanism. Whereas nothing in this country is built to benefit poor people. Nothing. Nothing. Everything in this country is built to benefit rich people, and poor people can and just so happen to benefit as well. Everything. Everything. It's capitalism 101. You see it in every single system. Every single system is created that way. The people with the most power within the system receive the benefits of the system. Everybody else benefits. For example, this just happened with Spotify literally this past weekend, where Spotify got rid of the shuffle option. We asked ourselves, well, why did Spotify get rid of the shuffle option? You cannot shuffle albums anymore on Spotify. You know why? It's because Adele requested for the shuffle to be removed so people can listen to her album sequentially. You think if a Joe Schmo out of Wisconsin went to Spotify and said, hey, get rid of that shuffle button, they would do it? The answer is hell no. Or let's take another system, for example, another systemic change that just occurred. YouTube getting rid of the dislike button. Do you think YouTube did that for the benefit of you, the consumer? Or let's do another one. Let's do Instagram, likes and dislikes. Or let's do another one, Instagram, likes and disabling comments. Do you think Instagram did that for you? You think Instagram cares that you get hateful comments? Or do they care that celebrities get hateful comments? Or do they care that celebrities might feel insecure about themselves? Nothing. And this is just minute examples. I'm not even getting into government and infrastructure, and I'm keeping it on this because it's as broadly applicable as humanly possible. Society does not work for the benefit of the people at the bottom of it. It works for the people at the top, and it trickles down to us plebs at the bottom. So we have to ask ourselves once again, America and the entertainment factor of high profile trials. Why? I will say one thing about this Mr. Rittenhouse situation. And the only reason why I am going to say what I'm going to say is because I've researched this case extensively when it first happened. Because I was incredibly fascinated by what I call the all parties revolution. In the 1970s, Gil Scott Heron released his poem, "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." That's where we got that terminology from. The revolution will not be televised. It came from this poem by Mr. Heron. And he wrote this poem at the tail end of the 1960s, where there were a string of assassinations. I mean, you want to talk about a chaotic time in human history, a chaotic time in American history. If those type of things were to happen in 2021, we would lose our freaking mind. Martin Luther King assassinated, John F. Kennedy assassinated, Medgar Evers assassinated, Fred Hampton assassinated, Malcolm X assassinated, Robert Kennedy assassinated. If that happened, and this is all in a 10-year span, if that all happened in our lifetime, in 2021, we would have serious issues. But this happened in the 1960s, and towards the 70s, in the beginning of the 70s, Heron wrote and performed "The Revolution Will Not Be Televised." I encourage you to go on YouTube and give it a listen, or type it into your Apple Music. It's available to stream. And what he meant by that was, though we are seeing this violence on our television screen, the change that we are seeking, the change that these powers have coming to them will not happen on the television screen. It will happen silently in the minds and the hearts of oppressed people. But what Mr. Heron did not predict, like many people in the 1970s, he did not predict a little rectangle in our pocket with the power to talk to whomever around the globe, to see anything around the globe in the blink of an eye. Like many people in the 1970s, what they imagined to be the revolutionary technology in 2021 would probably be something like commercial space travel, or hoverboards, or flying cars. In the 1970s, they did not imagine screens with the same power of a television or the same power of a 1980s computer in our phone. We have the same type of computing power in our pockets that took the first person to the moon. That's in our pockets. In the 1970s, they didn't predict that. So what Mr. Heron did not predict is the advent of technology. And not only what Mr. Heron did not predict, he did not predict the possibility of what happened on January 6th also being an outgrowth of some subset of the population wishing and wanting their own version of revolution. Their own version of revolution. And what I always say about January 6th, when those white supremacists and others, conservatives to be more specific and to not label with a broad and derogatory brush, what shocked me the most out of my freaking boots about January 6th, and what shocked me the most about Kyle Rittenhouse, and what shocks me the most about the protest that Kyle Rittenhouse was at in the first place, what shocks me the most is that nobody, I mean nobody, galvanized themselves for the plight of poor people who were suffering as a result of the pandemic. Nobody galvanized themselves when the federal government was taking their sweet time with stimulus legislation. But we get up in arms to jump at the throats of each other because of insignificance. Do we not understand something, ladies and gentlemen? Do we not understand how unintentional we are being with our ire, with our wrath? So then you have to ask, if society, the media at large, is playing on these narratives, and I'm not going to say narratives of division, because narratives of division is a little, it's an overplayed term. The powers that be aren't trying to divide us per se. But, and this is the big but here. This is the big BBL, but oh Lord. All right. This is the big but though. The big but here is that what the powers that be are trying to do, they are trying to incentivize the idea of people power to change systems. But that's the center of what's happening, right? It's whenever there's a publicized case of this sort, whenever America turns the lives of individuals into entertainment, both the deceased and the living, they're trying to evoke an emotion. They do not put it in front of you unless they are certain that it will evoke an emotion. And the greater multiplicity of emotions, the happier they are, right? So in this circumstance, there's race, injustice, power, armed, unarmed, policing, history. There are so many emotions to incense by allowing this dialogue to play out in the public sphere. And the reason why it is so enticing is because the solutions are hidden behind a fog of our own ignorance. It's an impossible problem to solve. Because say they put Kyle Rittenhouse in jail for his transgressions, what does that do for self-defense laws going forward? Or is there something systemic beneath all of our interactions with each other? Is there some grand programming beneath all of our interactions with each other? And could it quite be that the only way to break the systemic programming that we are under is by being intentional, knowing what we're absorbing, why we're absorbing it, how are we absorbing it, and what it is doing to our psyche? Asking ourselves the tough questions and not lying to ourselves when we get the answer that makes us uncomfortable. A couple of years ago, I used to have Black Power meetings at my parents' house. They would happen the first Sunday of every month, if I recall correctly, and one of the good brothers listening is probably going to correct me, but if I'm not mistaken, it was the first Sunday of every month. And we would sit, we would talk about the world, about politics, about history, about where this country is going and where we can take it. And we'd say all manner of political incorrect things, all type of politically incorrect jargon at the top of our lungs with the utmost confidence, laughing and bellowing. Oh, I miss those days. Those were such good days. Life was very, very simple then. We were young, filled with vigor, filled with all the vigor in the world, thinking that we could change the world based upon our specialness. And we were such a open, conscious, loving bunch. Very, very aware of ourselves and the world and what was changing around us and what we had to do to rebuff this change. And somebody brought up in the flow of dialogue, one conversation, if we would ever let a gay man into our circle to participate in these dialogues. Could a gay black man sit amongst us and enjoy our dialogue? Would we listen to his ideas? It was a unanimous no. Except for me. Except for me. And I am not saying this to make myself a hero. And my hesitancy, my inability to say no outright, came from the fact that I just don't understand gayness. And so it would be wrong of me to tell somebody that they can't be around me because I don't understand a portion of their lifestyle. So my hesitancy had nothing to do with morality, had nothing to do with me thinking at the time, hey, gay people could add something valuable to our political discourse too. My hesitancy only had to do with me actually exploring the concept, exploring the idea, and not giving it an answer, and thinking, I don't know, because I don't understand gayness, so I cannot determine somebody unfit to sit in our dialogue purely based upon the orientation of who they're interested in. Like, it would just be a silly concept. Now, and I said in return, I would like to sit with a gay person to understand gayness. If that's what we're bringing to the forefront as a prerequisite, I'd have to understand gayness to think, is it possible for that to preclude them from the dialogue that we're having about the state of the world? But I don't understand gayness in that regard to use it as a disqualifier. And one of the homies said in response, he used the anecdote of a conversation he had with his cousin. And he said that his cousin told him that if he tried to understand something like that, then you're one step closer to becoming that thing. And I sat with that for a little bit because it's funny. But I had to think about that. And then I went to, if I went to go sit with a carpenter and told him to tell me his story regarding how we got into carpentry, how carpentry affects his life and his philosophy and the way he looks at things in general, would that by proxy make me closer to becoming a carpenter? Or is there an action that one has to take in order to become a carpenter? Is understanding or investigating that makes us one step closer to becoming? And then I thought, if I sit and talk with a pastor, a Baptist pastor, and a carpenter at the same time, am I one step closer to becoming Jesus? If I adopt Christianity and I learn how to build a birdhouse, will I be closer to being Jesus? But then I thought, the idea behind Jesus being a carpenter in the narrative that is Christianity has to do with his ability to build. His ability to build with his own hands, to make something from nothing with his mind and his hands, is why Jesus is a carpenter in the biblical canon. Do y'all hear me out there? I said the reason why Jesus is a carpenter in the biblical canon is because of his ability to make something from nothing, to use his mind to build. To make something from nothing. And in making something from nothing, he can lay the foundation for many things. Because a carpenter lays the foundation of a house. Because without no foundation, a house can't stand. And in order for all of us to have a home, both in society and in our hearts, we have to have a foundation. A place where things make sense. We can't go out into the world trying to make sense of it if nothing within us makes sense at all. So I encourage all of you, be intentional with your time. Take your nothing and build something out of it. Don't take the narratives of the world and try to make sense of it. That is fruitless. They offer no solutions with their dialogue. Make solutions with your inner dialogue. Bring change to your life. Make something from nothing, whether that be with your hands or with your mind, but manifest something. Don't manifest what they tell you. Forget what they're doing at the top. Just because LeBron James is tweeting disparaging things at Kyle Rittenhouse, he's comfortable. They know deep down inside that the real escalation is about those with power and those without. That's what they're afraid of. The revolution being televised is what they're afraid of. And that we, instead of having discourse about Kyle Rittenhouse, we start having broad discourse about our resources. We start having broad discourse about stimulus checks. We start having broad discourse about why people are looting this winter. We have broad discourse about those things. Why are we hungry out here? That's what they're afraid of. That's what they don't want. That's what's not going to be a 7-day series on CNN and MSNBC. That's what the power structure is not going to talk about. let me actually read you guys this sutra I'm working on from the Dhammapada. It's called Crossing the Stream. Few cross over the river. Most are stranded on this side. On the riverbank, they run up and down. But the wise person following the way crosses over beyond the reach of death, free from desire, free from possessions, free from attachment and appetite. Following the seven lights of awakening and rejoicing greatly in one's freedom, in this world, the wise person becomes oneself a light, pure, shining, and free. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I love you all. I truly do. I thank you for listening. I thank you for participating, for giving me your ears and minds, allowing my thoughts to transmit into yours. I am forever grateful, a humble servant. I am very, very happy for what's in store. I'm going to keep working towards bettering the world and changing the world and adopting a mentality that is going to free us and not keep us in bondage. It all starts with the mentality. It all starts with the mind. It all starts with being intentional, with parlaying with ourselves before we parlay with the world, by taking personal inventory of our mentality before we start putting our mentality in the form of expectations onto those we love and those around us. We have to take long, hard looks at ourselves. And those long, hard looks are always painful. But I encourage all of us to disinvest in the material world just a little bit every week. You don't have to do it all today. You don't have to do it all tomorrow, but just a little bit. Just a little bit. Start disinvesting. Start moving away. Stop feeding it to certain conversations. And you'll start to see your inner world change. And eventually the outer world will match that change. I promise. I promise you that. But once again, ladies and gentlemen, I love you guys so much. You were life in the human form. You are the universe becoming extremely conscious.
No friends in the industry. My brothers been my brothers, man. You niggas ain't no kidding me. A fact. Well, yeah, you heard about me. You don't know me more than that. Yeah, I know hey, yeah. No friends in the industry. My brothers been my brothers, man. You niggas ain't no kidding me. A fact. Whoa, I was known for snapping when I chat before the app. Stood on everything I said and never took it back. Whoa, no friends in the industry. I had to draw the line between my brothers and my enemies. A fact. Niggas let us start a beat, don't wanna keep it rap. Yeah, you hit us up and now we owe you something back. If it's out, if it's good, see you. I was young, angel, but these niggas turn me evil. Yeah, I know you, but you really ain't my people. Yeah, I heard some people say they know him as my equal. Truth be told, I son these niggas, girl, I don't compete with them. Ask about the boy and they gon' say he got the streets with them. Niggas so offensive knowing they don't have no defense. Why they always act like we can face it with a meeting? All that linking up, man, I'ma see him when I see ya. Yeah, brothers been my brothers, man. You niggas ain't no kidding, that's a fact. Ayy, and I'm like Shakari, smoke them on and off the track. Ayy, and you love that hoe with me, I put her on her back. You get Drizzy on the track, here, put you on the map. Oh, it's like that, hell yeah, it's like that. Ayy, and I got a contract, it's a max. Ayy, since I got in contact, she attached. When I saw my first deal, that shit came through a fax. That should let you know how long I've been out here running laps.
I've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. No friends in the industry, my brothers been my brothers, man. You niggas ain't no kidding me, a fact. Whoa, I was known for snapping when I chat before the app. Stood on everything I said and never took it back. Whoa, no friends in the industry. I had to draw the line between my brothers and my enemies, a fact. Niggas let us start the beat, don't wanna keep it rap. Yeah, you hit us up and now we owe you something back. If it's out, if it's good, don't watch out. Hey, what?
dirty, got a yellow tape. And I got her waiting at the telly naked. We ain't dropped, though, how you niggas celebrating already. Disrespecting something I ain't tolerating. Your niggas fuck with me, I give them motivation. In your circle shrinking, see some boys escaping. Rest of them is guilty by association. Ayy, what? For debating who the GOAT. Then I make the shit about the numbers, all I know. Then I make the shit about the summer, all I know. Better find someone else to hit with all that smoke, nigga. Yeah, and all them tweets and all them posts. Ain't got the type of time to be playing with you folk. I had a richer pride to these niggas, that's the joke. I'm really down to die behind these verses in my notes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, brothers, but my brothers, man, you niggas ain't no kidding, that's a...
I can play off the iPod?
Yeah, because this a motherfucker 2016, babe. That's I see baby. The way the lights go. See, on the dashboard, the lights go on the dashboard, how you know it's new. Ooh.